Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Time for another bedtime story. We're reading A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens. This is Chapter 13, Dr. Manette's New Power. The Tellson's bank office in Paris was in the wing of a large house. When the revolution came, the nobleman who owned the house put on his servant's clothes and fled the country. Mr. Lorry was working late one night when Lucy and her father burst into the room. "What are you doing in Paris?" he cried. "What is wrong?" "Charles is here," gasped Lucy, looking as if she might faint from sheer terror. "It can't be true," cried Mr. Lorry. "Yes, he has been here four days. He came to help an old servant, but he was stopped at the city gates and sent to the prison of La Force."
"Then you two will be in danger as well," cried Mr. Lorry.
"My dear friend," said Dr. Manette calmly, "I do not believe anyone in this city would harm me. In fact, they would welcome me after all of my suffering in the Bastille. That suffering will give me the power to help Charles."
"Then we must speak alone while Lucy goes to my rooms at the back of the bank to rest."
And Mr. Lorry ushered Lucy out of the office. When they were alone, Mr. Lorry motioned to Dr. Manette to look out the window. In the courtyard beyond was a huge grindstone being turned by two savage-looking men. Fighting to get close to sharpen their hatchets, knives, and swords were 40 or 50 frenzied men whose blood and sweat mixed with the sparks from the stone.
"What is the meaning of this?" asked the doctor, drawing away from the window.
"They are going to murder the prisoners at La Force," said Mr. Lorry. "If you really have the power you think you have, then go out among those savages, tell them who you are, and seek help for Charles. There is no time to spare."
Hardly were the words out of Mr. Lorry's mouth than the doctor was standing before the grindstone in the courtyard, his white hair streaming in the wind, his eyes gleaming with determination, his arms waving excitedly as he spoke. Suddenly a roar went up from the crowd. "Long live the Bastille prisoner! Long live his kin! Save Evrémonde from La Force!" Then the mob surged forward, with Dr. Manette at the front, leading the way to La Force. Mr. Lorry left the window and went to comfort Lucy through the long night ahead. The next morning, when Dr. Manette had not returned, Mr. Lorry found a small apartment nearby where Lucy, her child, and Miss Pross would be more comfortable. Then he hired Jerry Cruncher to guard them. The day dragged on as Mr. Lorry attended to his duties at the bank, and still there was no word from Dr. Manette. Then, just after closing time, a stranger entered his office.
"Do you know me, Mr. Lorry?"
asked the thin, dark-haired man.
"I have seen you somewhere," replied Mr. Lorry, wondering how the man knew his name.
"Perhaps at my wine shop," said Ernest Defarge.
Mr. Lorry's eyes opened wide.
"Do you come from Dr. Manette?" he asked eagerly.
Defarge handed him a note from the doctor. It was dated only an hour before and read, "Charles is safe, but I cannot leave this place yet. The bearer of this message also has a note from Charles to his wife."
"I will take you to his wife," said Mr. Lorry
when he had finished reading the note. As they went out into the courtyard, Mr. Lorry saw Madame Defarge standing near the grindstone, knitting as she had been when Mr. Lorry had last seen her years before.
"My wife will come with us," said Defarge, "so she can recognize the people we are going to see. It is for their safety."
Mr. Lorry was slightly suspicious of this reasoning, but did not wish to delay. When Mr. Lorry and the Defarges arrived at the apartment, they found Lucy weeping. She read the brief note from Charles.
"Be brave, darling. I am well, and your father is helping me. Kiss our child for me."
Lucy turned to the Defarges to thank them tearfully, but the cold glare she got in return from Madame Defarge gave her a moment of terror. That terror grew when the glare was turned on her child and Miss Pross as well.
"Come," said Madame Defarge, smiling slyly at her husband. "I have seen them. We can go now."
Dr. Manette did not return from La Force for 4 days. During that time, 1,100 prisoners were murdered by the bloodthirsty mobs. During that time also, Dr. Manette had appeared before a self-appointed people's court, which had been sentencing most prisoners to death, and told of his 18 years of suffering in the Bastille. those members of the court who were not asleep or drunk listened to him, including Ernest Defarge, who backed up his story. The decision was made to spare the prisoner's life, but for his own safety, Charles would have to remain in jail. Dr. Manette begged for permission to remain too, and thus assure himself that Charles would not mistakenly be dragged out and killed by the mob. On the fourth day, Dr. Manette returned home to bring news to Lucy, and because of his newfound fame, he had been named Inspecting Doctor of La Force Prison. Thus, in the days, weeks, and months following, he was able to see Charles often and to inform Lucy that he was well, but Dr. Manette could not get Charles freed or even brought to trial. The king, however, was tried and found guilty of crimes against the people. His sentence, beheading by the guillotine, that terrible instrument of death created by the revolution. Its victims were wheeled through the streets in wooden carts amid cheering and jeering mobs and dragged onto the platform. Yes, the guillotine provided great excitement for the bloodthirsty mobs. Would Charles be its next victim? One evening upon his return from the prison, Dr. Manette told Lucy that if she stood at a certain place on the road across from La Force at three every afternoon, he could arrange to have Charles at an upper window from which he could see her. From that time on, Lucy went to the spot every day, in all weather, often with her daughter. She couldn't see Charles, but even if she could, it would have been very dangerous to wave to him. Still, she hoped he saw her. On that same street where Lucy stood each day was a dark and dirty hut, the home of a woodcutter who was once a road fixer. After seeing Lucy there day after day, the woodcutter called, "Good afternoon, citizeness." "Good afternoon, citizen," she replied, using the new words ordered by the revolution. "You walk here often, citizeness," he said. "But that's none of my business. My business is sawing wood to build guillotines." This conversation was repeated every day, with Lucy becoming more and more frightened at the sight of the revolution's new instrument of death. One snowy afternoon, Dr. Manette met Lucy on that street and brought her the news. "Charles is being put on trial tomorrow." Behind them, rattling through the snow, came the wooden carts carrying their victims to the guillotine. End of chapter 13. Good night.